Did you hear about the elderly couple in the South Bronx apartment who, because of a terrifying fear of crime, made a suicide pact, laid out their burial robes, and then slashed their wrists and hung themselves? This elderly couple had $23,000 in the bank, but they were totally afraid to even leave their apartment to buy milk and bread because of a vicious crime terrorist environment in that community where young teenage thugs were preying on the elderly. The elderly gentleman had been beaten in the head by being repeatedly knocked against a balustrade in his apartment building a year and a half earlier and was never quite right in his mind after that. The woman, when they discovered her body, had fresh wounds all up her arm because of the most recent robbery of that elderly couple's apartment, in which some young teenage thugs picked up a two-pronged meat fork trying to get this lady to tell where she had hidden her money. And here were these neatly spaced wounds all the way up her arm, onto her neck and her face. She told the thugs where her money was just before they got to her eyes. And we still don't think we ought to punish criminals. Why aren't vicious murderers, rapists, and criminals severely punished for their crimes? Why do you hear scenes like those of the San Quentin death row who, when they learned of the news of the overturning of the California death sentence recently, were having such a tremendous gay old time up there that one man in the prison said if they'd had champagne, they would have been drinking it. They were really hooping it up and celebrating because now they didn't have to pay that ultimate penalty for their crimes. Now, already I got people slobbering, quavering, and the sob sisters are kneeling in front of their television sets, bawling in outrage, unbelievable venom, anger, and frustration at any human being who would dare to suggest that we ought to take another human being's life. Besides, many people say these hardened criminals aren't really afraid of death. Well, look at Gilmore up there. He's begging them to put him to death. They don't really fear death, which is why a lot of times they commit crimes. Not so, say the reports. The one thing that many of these hoods really fear more than anything else is death itself. That's why they fight with every means at their disposal to try to avoid being put to death for their murder, and that's why they shout with glee and celebrate so vociferously when they learn that they're going to have life sentence or some other kind of a sentence instead of really paying the ultimate penalty for their crime. But why are these people continually put out onto the street to prey upon the elderly again when the chances are they got a rap sheet about as long as your leg of 25 previous crimes, ranging all the way from petty thievery as a kid to stealing bicycles, automobiles, breaking and entering, vandalism, petty theft, mugging, robbery, rape, arson, maybe an indictment for murder that they got off on, maybe a trip to the correction camp and an escape or two. It's true. You go to the police departments and find out that just a tiny percentage of a certain number of vicious gang leaders and other petty crooks and criminals, although they're not so petty oftentimes, are perpetrating about 80 or 90% of the crime in any given area. Some of these people have been arrested 50 and 60 times, some of them as often as at least once or twice a month throughout the year. Year after year in their lives, but they're back on the streets. The question is why? This South Bronx double suicide was unbelievably bad. A devoted couple's last days of stoic terror, in which this elderly couple, 78 and 76, Hans Cable and his wife Emma, were found dead in their little apartment in that very terrible crime-ridden section of the Bronx. It was ruled a double suicide, but this devoted couple had their health relatively intact. If you take into consideration he wasn't quite right in his head after the first attack a year and a half earlier, and that she still had fresh wounds on her arm. They had $23,000 in a bank. They carefully laid their burial robes on the bed before slashing their wrists and hanging themselves. Police said there was a note there written in the German language that they were tired of living in fear and had become despondent about rising crime in the neighborhood where they had lived most of their lives. Like millions of other elderly citizens, these people, Hans and Emma Cable, lived in the constant fear of being attacked, mugged, beaten, raped, or murdered by young hoodlums who coolly would single out old people as the easiest marks in town. So in the end, they were living totally indoors. They were afraid to go out of their apartment for milk and bread. In their prison apartment, because they were really imprisoned, the crooks were free to run about. The bandits still broke in and beat them and took away their will to live. The muggers beat the cables, but they couldn't get any information out of Hans because, you see, the previous beating a year and a half before had rendered him so incapable of answering that he couldn't quite understand what was going on, couldn't answer, and his mind wasn't quite the same after that. The results of the attack on Emma were still fresh on her body when police found her, fresh scabs on her arm from that meat fork. The young crooks, by the way, were probably about 12, 13, or 14 years of age, did get the money. She told them where the $200 was hidden just before they got to her eyes. But the obsession and the fear of these attacks finally led to a double suicide. What did this couple fear? Pain, suffering, and death. And yet they were driven to such despair that they quite literally perhaps created a very serious crime of their own. If you look at it that way, by taking their own lives. Unbelievable things happening to some of the elderly who are the victims of these criminal acts in city after city around the United States. In Oakland, there was a story about Rosa Ortiz, who had been robbed so many times she really couldn't recall the actual number, but it was found that in the second serious beating in 18 months alone, this 85-year-old, 100-pound widow had actually been injured by wounds to the head, chest, and legs, had been sent to the hospital under intensive care, and it was determined that the young man who did it had earlier killed an elderly 84-year-old, 98-pound widow who lived less than a block away. Now get the picture. Here is this young guy, James Stephen Greeley, age 18, the same James Greeley who had been sent to the county boys' camp for the murder of Mrs. Locke, 84, 98 pounds, who lived less than a block away from Mrs. Ortiz. She had been robbed, raped, and beaten to death in the living room of her little two-room bungalow. This young 18-year-old boy had been on furlough from a boys' camp where it turned out that his release and subsequent arrest had fanned the flames of a furor. Eventually, some of the citizens were getting a little upset about it. You know, there's new law. A lot of people have voted for that kind of a law. One legislator, I was kind of interested to see what he said, and I'll tell you about that a moment or two later, because he was a congressman up in the Boston area who said it was getting a little harder to be a liberal because of what had happened to him personally. He was one of those who voted for this furlough law, which says criminals in the camps or the prisons can get a weekend pass, you know, to go home. So this 18-year-old boy was on furlough, and he was in there because of this murder and rape of an elderly 84-year-old woman. He went back to less than a block away of the scene of that same crime and beat so badly an 85-year-old, 100-pound lady that she was hospitalized. You figure this out. You figure out the kind of laws that allow that type of thing to happen. But this was interesting. This Representative Richard E. Landry, Democrat from Waltham, Massachusetts, who said he was approached by a man at about 10 p.m. when he tried to enter his car after work. The man pulled out a gun, pointed it at Landry, and demanded his money. He said, "I did what he told me. About $40 was taken, but the police couldn't find any suspects." Incidentally, he said his car had been stolen from the Capitol parking lot 2 weeks previously. He said, "I voted for the prison furlough bill, but to tell you the truth, it's getting harder and harder for me to remain a liberal." I should think so. That's good news. I'm going to make a proposal. I'm going to propose that it ought to be put into law that one of the qualifications for anyone to be a legislator, whether it's state, county, local, or national levels, if he's going to have anything whatsoever to do with laws about criminal justice and crime, he ought to either have been the victim of a crime, or he ought to be the loved one or the family member of a person who has been the victim of crime. It might give him a totally different perspective. It's too bad that that isn't a qualification for some of those who write the laws that are responsible for revolving door justice that allow these hardened, filthy, unbelievably vicious thugs, hoodlums, and criminals to go and spend 10 or 15 minutes at the police station until they look up the record. "Oh yeah, we know you. You don't need to fingerprint him and take his picture this time. Okay, here's your lawyer. There's your phone call. You're free to go. Read him his rights and let him go." They're back out on the street. 10 minutes later, an hour later, a day later, or a month later, somebody's going to get killed. And then sure enough, you find out that this person had a rap sheet as long as your leg. In a moment, I'm going to show you another tragic assault on the elderly by young thugs down in Miami Beach, Florida. Tell you about one of the most tough propositions about preventing criminal acts you have ever read in a piece of ancient literature, and talk for a moment about some other cities in the world where you think they are terribly, terribly unsafe, where you can walk along at night with your watch on your wrist, your ring on your hand, your wallet in your pocket, whistling cheerfully, and they're not in the United States of America. They're in Arab countries.
Charlie Taylor thought they were delivering a new TV set. I put new locks on the doors.
And we weren't gone for very long.
Why, they came in broad daylight.
I didn't think we had that many things worth stealing.
We've got lots of reasons why a crime couldn't happen to us, but it can and does. This informative free booklet, Crime Can Be Stopped, gives you valuable ways to help protect your home. Dial direct 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. Remember, no one is immune to crime.
Right for this free booklet, Crime Can Be Stopped, here's how. This talks about the causes and the cures for crime. Now, this booklet has been used by many a school, a law enforcement agency, drug agencies, and others. We have sent mass mailings, even thousands of copies at a single time, for responsible agencies who requested it because of a need, whether in a school situation or not. But you can have your personal free copy if you'll pick up the telephone and dial that toll-free number, 800-423-4444. In Alaska, California, and Hawaii, it's area 213-577-5225. I think one of the most vicious crimes I've heard of recently was that tragic assault on an elderly lady down in Miami Beach. This lady, Sarah Kirsch, 70 years of age, had gone to Miami Beach recently because she was afraid of the crime in New York City. Now she's dead. Apparently she choked slowly to death by a cloth gag put in her mouth by armed robbers who were angered because she only had 3 cents to give them. It happened like this. An elderly lady living in Miami Beach, Florida, wanted some friends to come over and keep her company because she was sick. Her name was Esther Josephson, 77. The two ladies who went over to visit her were this Mrs. Kirsch and Adelaide Slouse, who was 81. A knock came on the door while the ladies were there. They thought it was another lady friend. They opened the door. Two young thugs with guns and a knife showed up and said they wanted money. Be quiet. Nobody gets hurt. The one lady said, I gave them $40, all I had. Mrs. Slouse gave them $85, all she had. But the lady, Mrs. Kirsch, only had 3 cents. So the thug said, we'll fix you for that. So they hit her over the head. Mrs. Slouse was hit, and she said, please stop, as they beat on Mrs. Kirsch, because you see, she knew that Mrs. Kirsch had had a broken hip and an operation, and her hip was held together by a pin. But they bound them all with tape and electric cord, and they slung Mrs. Kirsch to the ground in a very painful condition and began beating her on the head. Then they gagged her. And the other ladies lay there after those crooks went calmly through the house, stole everything, the jewelry, the safe box, the checkbook, their medicines, then took some soft drinks out of the refrigerator, sat down to drink them while Mrs. Kirsch strangled to death on the floor. They were praying to God to deliver them, and the lady said, God apparently didn't hear us. Neither did the neighbors, neither did anyone else apparently at that time, although I think God did, but right now God is not intervening because we are not willing to follow His laws. We're not willing to turn to the Word of God to see the greatest, the most righteous, the most powerful law that was ever given to a carnal, mundane, physical, human society that believed in taking care of its problems physically instead of depending upon God necessarily, was a law that was so righteous it said that Moses' skin shone when he came down from Sinai. A lot of people think the Ten Commandments were all that was given there. Oh no, there was a powerful law I'm going to talk about, which believe it or not is still utilized, at least parts of it, in some Arab countries today. But first, Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 11 is an interesting scripture. It says this, Because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. An interesting precept, isn't it? When you do not punish exactly proportionate to the degree of the crime, you do not do so consistently and speedily, then it looks like the criminal intent is fully set in the hearts of men to do evil. A decade and a half ago, J. Edgar Hoover said, "We're faced today with one of the most disturbing trends I witnessed in my years of law enforcement, an overzealous pity for the criminal and equivalent disregard for his victim. Americans are noted for favoring the underdog, but all too often we have witnessed a mad dog transformed into an underdog by people who quickly forget or choose to ignore the great suffering by innocent victims of hardened and professional criminals." Now, I can hear people fairly slobbering away about the death sentence, about how it is cruel and unusual punishment. We should not put these people to death. No man should ever have to die for a crime. How can we, in some civilized world, think of taking the life of some poor, quavering man who all he did is go out and kill his wife and his child, or kill his daughter, or kill his uncle, or his father, or his friend? And most homicides are among family members. Some of them over the Thanksgiving turkey. A couple of people got into a fight recently and killed one another over the argument over a CB radio channel. So it happens every day. The thousands die. As a matter of fact, did you know that every baby born since 1974 in a large urban area in the United States now has a greater chance of dying as a victim of crime, a victim of murder, than did the average G.I. Joe dying in World War II? It's a fact. An MIT study absolutely demonstrated it. If we remain in a big city, our chances are less of surviving now than if you wore olive drab during World War II. Now, that's an unbelievable statistic about the so-called greatest Christian nation on the face of the earth. I remember a network interview not long ago in which the interviewer had portable cameras and they were going along one of these great, large southern prisons. And you could see this crowded, hideous condition in there and all these criminals jammed in together. And then he took you through the corridor and around the corner and down the hall and in the door. And here was that terrible, terrible room. And with a voice just fairly dripping with pity and outrage, he showed you the chair. He showed you the straps. Here's where they strap their legs and they strap their chest and their arms and even their head, he said. And then here's the vat where they drop in. And, oh, it's grisly. You just couldn't. Oh, look, that's a chair. People have died in that chair. That's a death scene. And you just focused in on that chair and that vat where they put these cyanide pills. Then he told you the really great shocker. The real great shocker just made you sick to your stomach. You just fairly weak for these poor guys on death row. It sometimes took several minutes for them to die. Then we got to hear an interview with three criminals who had killed. I think one man had killed his wife and child. Now, he had this southern accent. He's sitting there, and this interviewer is talking about the crowded conditions, that prisons are places of homosexuality, of brutality, of overcrowded and filthy conditions, of corruption, of crime, of violence, drug addiction, perversion, so on. And he was saying, "Now, I just don't understand it." He said, "Locked up in here, this is just inhuman. I don't see how they can treat a man like this." No, sir. Just don't understand it. I mean, just living in here like this, just no man should have to live in a place like this all locked up. He shook his head and hung his head. Why, you were just almost crying for the poor guy until you happen to remember. I wonder what it felt like with that woman pleading for her life and the child. I wonder what it was like for them. I wonder if they, too, didn't think it was kind of inhuman. Mrs. Kirsch, who lay gagging on that piece of cloth, agony in her backbone, her spine and her hip, a horrible wound on her head. The poor old lady who was beat to death with a brick after she was raped by an 18-year-old. I wonder what they felt like, and I wonder why networks can't. I think one program did not long ago, as I recall. I missed it. I didn't get to see it. And I think it was 60 Minutes, as I recall, that did interview some of the victims for a change, which I also intend doing as I get the opportunity. They say that prisons are not really doing the job because they say prisons are full of violence, corruption, perversion, and homosexuality. In a moment, I'm going to tell you precisely why prisons are full of violence, corruption, perversion, and homosexuality.
Pioneer 10 races out of our solar system while religious war rages in Northern Ireland. Politicians search for peace while pollution engulfs our planet. The gross national product of the United States exceeds $1 trillion, while over 15,000 people starve to death worldwide each day. In this age of paradox unparalleled, where can you turn for understanding? There is a source that answers the frightening questions of the 20th century. It's called The Plain Truth. This magazine of understanding reveals the meaning behind today's world news and shows you the good news beyond. Today, more than ever before, you need The Plain Truth. For your free sample copy of the monthly Plain Truth magazine, call toll-free 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Write for the current number of the Plain Truth magazine. We'd like to send you your free copy by return mail as quickly as you write, or better yet, call that toll-free number. The operators are waiting right now to take your call. You can dial that area toll-free number, 800-423-4444. Or in California, Alaska, and Hawaii, it's area 213-577-5225. This magazine of understanding seeks to go behind today's world news and make it come to life in the light of Bible prophecy. The address again at the end of this program, be sure to write in, or better yet, call in, because it's quicker, for your copy of The Plain Truth. Prisons, they say, are full of violence, corruption, perversion, and homosexuality. They are no fit place to send criminals. They are not rehabilitating them. They're overcrowded. They're uncomfortable. They're drafty. They're noisy. They're just not doing a good job. Do you know why prisons are full of violence? Because that's where they send violent people. Do you know why prisons are full of corruption? Because that's where corrupt people are sent. Do you know why they are full of perversion? Because that's where they put a lot of perverts. Do you know why they are filled with homosexuality? Because they send homosexuals who commit crimes to prison. Now, of course, you and I know that no dirty, rotten, filthy rapist, no thug who has beaten about 16 elderly ladies to the ground ought to be forced to live in an area where there is any violence around. Mercy sakes alive, good buddy. We can't stand to see something like that happen. Why, he might come in contact with a pervert. Just makes my poor heart bleed. I'm just about to bawl, break down, and sob here. Our system is inadequate. I mean, these people shouldn't be overcrowded. I frankly don't care if there isn't room for them to sit down. I mean, I can talk to people during World War II who were jamming to the holds of Japanese prison vessels. The Japanese, when they were sending people to prison camps, and I suppose the Americans too, didn't really care all that much about the rights of war prisoners. I wonder why people get so disturbed about the poor underdog, once society focuses its attention on this poor guy who allegedly comes from an underprivileged background. That's a lot of nonsense. Only 11% of hardened criminals are proved to have come from a poverty-level background. Keep that in your mind. And also, it is a fact that crime has increased with affluence. It decreases, like during the days of the Great Depression, and it increases with affluence. It has been going up and up and up, exactly proportionate to the standard of living in the United States. So those old excuses just do not go. But I'll tell you what would solve the problems of crowded prisons. It would be to adopt portions of whatever would be fair of one of the greatest, and I suppose a lot of people could say one of the harshest laws to ever be enacted, and yet a law that was supposed to be so righteous that Moses' face shone when he brought it down from the foot of Mount Sinai. This law that was added in addition to the Ten Commandments that had to do with civil laws found in the 21st and 2nd and 3rd chapters of the book of Exodus and elsewhere in the Torah, or the first five books of the Old Testament or Old Covenant, reads as follows. You shall give life for life. This talks about the death of a pregnant woman in the commission of a crime, for example, or a struggle between men. And she dies. Life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Now let's apply that in the case of a poor little old New York cab driver who told me he never wore his false teeth on the job anymore since that last time when the dirty rotten thug had taken a lead pipe and smashed its bridge work into 1,000 pieces, and so he just left it at home. So he just cheerfully gummed his words and smiled his red gum smile at people, but he wasn't about to risk wearing his teeth to work anymore. You know what would happen? If you applied that tooth for tooth law, if they caught that young rotten thug, they just stand him up in a public place, hand the cabbie a lead pipe, he walk up to him, smash him all the way to his wisdom teeth, let him spit out all the mess and say, you're free to go, son. There you go. Go help yourself. Go to a dentist. That's the end of it. You know what they would do to the gal, the young thug, who murdered poor Mrs. Kirsch down in Miami Beach? If they could catch him, well, they'd catch him first, of course, but if they do catch him, strip him of all of his money and put 3 cents in his pocket.
and then have some other guy, or better yet, one of the elderly ladies come up and beat him over the head with a brick, tie him up with an electric cord and tape him, jam him to the ground in a hideously twisted, grotesque position, and then put a gag in his mouth and let him slowly strangle to death. That's a fact. That's exactly what they would do. You know what they do accomplish in some of these Arab countries? A person steals, they lop off his hand. You go to the meat market, and they're alongside the not hams because they don't eat pigs, but the lambs, are human hands. You know, I have never seen in my visits to Arab countries a single Arab without both hands. There must be a lesson to that. It says, too, in the 22nd chapter of Exodus, if a thief be found breaking up, that's breaking and entering, and be smitten that he die by the landowner in the commission of his crime, there shall no blood be shed for him. But you've got to be careful if you're a homeowner and in possession of a gun and a burglar comes in, you better be all the way to the shower to prove that he chased you from the living room to the bedroom to the bathroom and into the shower, and the shower had better not even have a window you could have gotten out of before you shoot him in self-defense, or you could go to jail for his murder. But I don't think we're ever going to solve the problem of crime until we say, accept, or somehow vote in a mandatory sentence of 20 years automatically for the commission of any crime in which a gun is involved. Then you don't have to worry about gun control. Just swift, hard, sure laws. If you had an automatic death penalty for any crime in which a death occurs by the use of a gun, automatic, I think you'd find out that crime statistics would just plummet unbelievably. But probably we're not going to get that, especially when you see the will of the voters in California, which was to put back capital punishment, frustrated by technicalities of the law. Why are the criminals freed? Because somehow the system of criminal justice is shot full of so many loopholes, technicalities, and there's so many sharp young lawyers around who want to work like mad to get these guys off. They're back on the streets to perpetrate yet another vicious, brutal crime. Pick up the newspaper tomorrow and see what you read, and the next day, and the day after, and you see if you don't think, like that one Massachusetts senator, we're getting just a little tired of being liberal, and it's a little harder to stay liberal on this thing of punishment for crime. But write for this booklet, Crime Can Be Stopped, Here's How. It shows the real cause of crime and what the cure ought to be. It's free of charge if you dial right now the toll-free number, 800-423-4444. In California, Alaska, and Hawaii, that's area 213-577-5225. And also, while you're at it, request your copy of the Plain Truth magazine, the current number coming your way with articles just about the sociological problems in the United States and elsewhere around the world, from our offices all around the world. Graphic, fast-moving, very gripping and challenging reading. Free of charge, no price. The address again until next time. This is Garner Ted Armstrong saying, I hope you don't end up a victim of crime this week, but the chances are by the next time I'm coming your way, you never know.
For the free literature offered on this program, write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, BC. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.